brother Didi, brother Bluto.
You ain't that yin yang.
Who?
Niedermeyer. You hate his guts, right?
I guess so.
You guess so?
Yes, I hate him. I hate his guts.
Look, now we have an old saying in Delta. Don't get mad. Get even.
Well, in case you didn't know, that was from the movie Animal House, involving a pretty good prank that was played in Animal House. And it sort of seemed fitting because, you know what today is? It's April Fool's Day, and people have been playing jokes on April Fool's Day for a long time. I'm not even sure anyone knows when it actually got started. But our guest today can shed some light on this. They're co-researchers on a project involved collegiate pranking, and one of them is Jonathan Winnis, an associate professor and undergraduate program director at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, where he studies urban culture. Jonathan, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, and Ember Canley, doctoral student at University of Massachusetts Amherst in the Department of Sociology, with a research focus on examining gender and culture in the workplace. Ember, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks so much for having me.
So we'll talk to them about why we like to play pranks and why it can be a good thing. Maybe sometimes it's a bad thing for people. I've got an example of that. What's your favorite April Fool's story? Did you have one that went wrong? Join the conversation. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Well, how did you guys get involved in looking at pranks? John, maybe you can start.
Absolutely. Thank you. I did a research project on tourism and in New York City post September 11th, and I was interested in the ways that people told stories in the public kind of spaces of New York City. And one of the things that they did was to kind of play tricks on their audiences to keep them engaged and involved, maybe telling a story in an interesting way, possibly telling a fabrication or a lie just to get the audience kind of thinking about a particular issue. And that led me to writing an article about the kind of tricks of the trade. And that article got published, and then the New York Times asked me, said, hey, you're a sociologist who studies tricks. And then that's not really true. I thought I was being teased for that. But ever since then, I've been asked pretty much every year to say something about the sociology of pranks, and that has led me, it was kind of a trick that led me to thinking about it as a research project. Yeah. And so that's, I guess, how I started thinking about it. And then when Ember and I started working together, we started seeing some similarities in her research and my research and our interests. And so we started thinking about a way to make it much more of a scientific endeavor rather than just me kind of talking on public radio about pranks.
And Ember, what intrigues you about them?
So I spent 2 years in Western Massachusetts riding along and doing a research paper on firehouse culture. So I spent, mornings, afternoons, evenings on these engines and at the firehouse with men and women who work there. And it is one of the most playful, prank-heavy sorts of work environments that I've ever been in. So when John and I were talking about how it's very funny that every year he's approached to be the expert on pranking, that we should do this research project together and sort of see what pranking culture looks like on a campus.
Well, John, what's the difference between, you mentioned tricks earlier, what's the difference between a trick and a prank?
That's a great question. The research project is trying to figure that out. I would say that a trick is probably something where you are at least recognized that you're being signed up for a experience in which you are being tricked and that there's some sort of fabrication that's going on. I'm thinking of the theater or a card trick where somebody starts shuffling a deck of cards, and in shuffling a deck of cards, you are recognizing that you are participating or engaging in a particular kind of interaction. A prank tends to require a little bit more of a fabrication, some kind of deception, in the rules of the game, that you do not know that you're actually participating in it fully, right? So a trick, I would say, is something that you actually both kind of co-sign onto the relationship, you know, interaction. Wow. And then I would say maybe a prank is something where the ground rules are not, you know, are a little asymmetrical. Well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. But is there some difference here on practical jokes? Where do practical jokes fit into all this?
Perhaps in the middle, I would say. I would say probably more of a prank, right? There'd be a bit more of deception with a practical joke. I would say that it's close to the prank than a trick.
You know, I was finishing my master's degree and hadn't at that time decided to go on for a PhD, so I was looking for a job, and the secretary in the office where I studied left me a note that Dr. John Baer had called about a job opportunity, and I had been applying for a job at a place. And so I spent all day calling, trying to get through, and the lines were busy all day, and I was so frustrated. And finally, at 5:30, I got through, and it was to the Vilas Park Zoo. And you know, you said, well, I wanted to talk to Dr. Baer. Well, this is the Vilas Park Zoo. And so he said that at the zoo, they left the phone off the hook all day because they constantly were getting calls from people who wanted to talk to Mr. Baer. Or Mr. Deer.
A few good ideas. Yeah.
So that was one on me that really got me. But why? And I'm going to, I hope none of my students are listening, because I'm going to pull one on them today because they're getting their midterm exams back. And they're going to see a grade distribution that they're not going to like at all before I give the regular grades. But why do we like April Fool's Day? Ember, why do you like it?
Love April Fool's Day because I think it's sort of, it's similar to Halloween in that it's the one day of the year where you can really sort of subvert and change the norm and the expected. So you're breaking out of what's like typically expected from a social interaction. It can be something as small as bending of the everyday, like filling a salt shaker with sugar and then not telling your friend that you did that. And it can go, you know, down sort of the spectrum to something as elaborate as I had a friend who spent her entire week this week growing little seeds out of a keyboard so that she could swap out the keyboards at her tech workplace and then make a pun this morning about the workplace growth really exponentially growing.
Oh, my goodness. Well, what's the history? We've been doing this for a long time, haven't we, John?
Yeah, you know, we're sociologists, not historians. And in your teens, you did say that we've been doing this for a long time. And certainly that is one of the warrants for why we should be interested in this idea. Sociologists, if we see social phenomena everywhere, existing in all sorts of different places, with all kinds of different manifestations of salt shakers and class pranks and fraternities, sororities, things like that. If it exists everywhere, it has to serve some sort of purpose, right? And so for sociologists, we wonder, like, you know, what is the purpose of this kind of phenomenon? And for us, I think that what Ember and I are both trying to figure out is exactly what she said, is that this is a way for us to upend the social norms of the everyday, not to make it seem like that rules don't matter or that hierarchies don't matter between a boss and a secretary, for example, but actually to reinforce those norms, right? It is to show that one day you can upend the rules and subvert them, only to make sure that everybody is aware of what exactly those social norms and expectations are, right? And so for sociologists, we're interested in this kind of like that we have a pretty refined social order of expectations and interactions, how we interact with each other, who we interact with them, and in what ways. And in fact, sociologists have done things to try and figure out what are those hidden rules, right? We have rules for driving. We have rules for, you know, the law. We have rules for, you know, kind of economic exchange. But there's no rule book for interacting with office, you know, workers, and there's different rules for being in a relationship and things like that. And so it's only by breaching those rules that we actually get to learn what those boundaries are. And so why does it exist for centuries, millennia, decades, or however long it's been? It's because we have rules, we have social rules, and they're not codified in the way that other things in our lives are. And so it serves a purpose in that way for us to recognize what those rules really are.
It's interesting. I can remember sitting, I want to switch to animals for a minute, because I remember sitting in a woods observing, actually there were a couple of young deer and there were a couple of turkeys down in a valley below me, and I could see them. And every once in a while, the deer would look away from the turkey, and then the turkey would run at it and then run back. And then a little later, the deer would run at the turkey and then run back. And I observed this, and I thought, you know, I wonder if other animals, it seemed to me that they were kind of pranking each other.
Well, we'd have to have a scientific study about that, wouldn't we? I think we usually have to have a protocol, human subjects protocol, where they have to sign a waiver to admit, to say that they're doing some you know, participating in research. And I don't know if anyone's ever done turkey-based human subjects reviews.
Oh, but I wonder, you know, you do wonder if animals do similar things. And certainly it seemed to me, observing those animals, and they're not even the same species, that they were... They were having some fun kind of pranking each other a little bit.
It very well could be.
Oh, man. Well, there's some positive things that come out of pranking. Are there?
Well, yeah. I mean, like I was saying, I think, you know, Ember can certainly jump in, but I think that one of the things that they do is that they reinforce what our expectations are. And I think maybe another way is to relieve some anxiety, maybe to as a sense of escape. As a way to, you know, kind of break from the you know, kind of everyday expectations that we have, a release. Ember said Halloween, right? And so Mardi Gras is like that. The Mummers Day Parade in Philadelphia is like that. You know, Rio Carnival is like this, where you can kind of, there's some sort of emotional release that comes from it. And so I think that there's certainly some of that. Ember, I don't know if you have any other thing. I mean, certainly in the workplace, there could be positive and negative aspects.
Yeah, Ember, I'm going to have you hold. Think about that, because we're going to take a little break here. Jonathan Winnis, our guest today, Ember Canely as well. Ember's a doctoral student. Jonathan is an associate professor, both at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. I hope you'll join in with your April Fool's stories at 1-800-642-1234, back after the news. Well, have you been pranked today on this April Fool's Day? Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Talking about practical jokes on April 1st, our guest, Jonathan Winnis. Jonathan is an associate professor and undergraduate program director at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, where he studies urban culture. Ember Canely, a doctoral student there in the Department of Sociology with a research focus on examining gender and culture in the workplace. She and John are co-researchers on a project involving collegiate pranking. So what's your favorite prank? Have you ever had one pulled on you? Have you ever done a good one? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Ember, let's go to you and talk about some more of the things, the positive or maybe negative things that come out of pranking.
Absolutely, Larry. So in my personal research on firefighting and other workplaces that are more first responder geared have huge pranking culture for a few reasons, the largest being joking, dark humor, and pranking actually acts as a coping mechanism, sort of like an outlet and a way to deal with the daily stresses of the job. So firefighters in particular can make, you know, sort of darker humor jokes around their colleagues in ways that they can't when they leave work, because it feels like no one outside of their work can sort of empathize or relate to them. And in this, this actually operates as a mechanism to sort of build a feeling of togetherness and in-group solidarity that, you know, they're all going through the same things together and they understand where they're each coming from.
I bet police departments have similar kinds of things happening there. Would you?
Absolutely.
I would guess. Well, let's talk about things going too far. Sometimes jokes go too far. How does that happen?
Well, that's one of the things that we're really interested in is on college campuses. And so we tried to think about kind of goofing around. You know, we have a college campuses are places where you have lots of different people from lots of different places with lots of different kind of values and culture systems. And we also are living in an age of Me Too, where we're kind of more concerned about issues of gender and power. We have a wider understanding of the LGBTQI issues and ongoing racial awareness. And so working on a campus, you know, Ember and I both are interested in issues of how this kind of goofing around kind of butts up against other more serious, you know, kind of the darker side of things as far as hazing, harassment, bullying, and, you know, even assault. And so, you know, one of the things that we found is that context really matters. And what might be one interaction that is between two people that is has a relationship based on trust is can also, if those people don't have the same kind of trust or the same kind of relationship, the same very same interaction can come out very, very differently.
It's interesting, and sometimes it can be expensive. I don't know if did you see the story on Jordan Bell from the Golden State Warriors? And this is his second year playing. His first year as a, you know, the basketball team pranks the first year guys quite a bit. And so now he's in his second year. So he thought, I'll do some pranking. And so whatever hotel they were at, he put on somebody else's bill, was one of the assistant managers. He charged a $15 candle, a candle you light, to the guy's bill. And it was Mike Brown, I think it was. And he wasn't in on the joke. So he got his feelings hurt and thought he was going to get charged for this anyway. For that $15 prank, he was suspended for a game without pay. And that missed game check cost him $9,505. So that's about 630 $15 candles.
An expensive prank.
That was an expensive prank. Have you got some examples of pranks that talk maybe a bit more about some that may have gone wrong? Or went too far?
I think I definitely want to co-sign what John just said. Pranking is a very, very individualistic sort of ritual, and context absolutely does matter. So when we did research on campus and had undergrads interviewing other undergrads about sort of pranking culture and what have you noticed, what have you participated in or been sort of the butt of the joke in, people responded and said that a lot of it had to do with their closeness and proximity to the person being pranked. So if they were really good friends, their social standing, are you pranking down the power hierarchy? Are you sort of pranking up and like targeting your boss or your sports team manager? Context absolutely matters. And there is definitely a sort of gray line in which pranking crosses into sort of hazing, harassment, and bullying within these contexts.
I'm trying to remember. I'm thinking about collegiate. You'll know this prank, but it was two universities that were going to be playing football, and I don't remember the schools or anything. But they had the one team had cards that they would hold up, you know, go whoever or whatever, and the other college managed to somehow figure out how to jumble the cards up. So that when they were held up, it came in favor of the other team.
That's a good example of how a prank can solidify a group solidarity, right? And so, you know, they're pranking one kind of campus on another campus. And, you know, these things can certainly get exacerbated to the point of it being, you know, kind of out of control, right? But you read stories of stealing the mascot of one campus to another, you know, for another campus or something like that. Or maybe I've just watched too many, you know, movies.
Yeah, you wonder to what extent a movie, like, you know, we played Dave Protratz, our engineer, played a little piece from Animal House. You wonder if movies might have be an aid for people or give them ideas about pranks.
It does seem, I was surprised that there weren't more students talking about pranks, frankly. We talked about goofing off. We asked them about, you know, what would you call goofing off? And I think that maybe Ember was not surprised because she's younger than I am. I'm more of an old. And she, but for me, I was really surprised at how little people would talk about this. And what Ember said was is that we had undergraduates interviewing other undergraduates. So it's not like these undergraduates were keeping something from talking to like a middle-aged man like me. They were talking to their peers, and so it does seem. I am actually curious to know if this is a culture, if this is something that doesn't necessarily happen on college campuses as much anymore. But Ember's evidence on, you know, kind of the firehouses does show that this does still exist in other workplace environments.
Is there a difference? Were you able to find a difference between men and women in terms of pranks or the type of prank that they played? Ember, do you want to pipe in there?
Yeah, sure. So within a lot of these circumstances, in firehouses, women firefighters were often either completely left out of the entire pranking process. And in this, they didn't get to participate in a ritual that really does help sort of form this group cohesion and the sense of solidarity with each other. And in this, we're never targeted. Or if women were involved in the pranks that I observed, they're typically the one put in the position of carrying out the act because the firefighters would deem them, well, we can't go too hard on her if the prank is being carried out by her.
Interesting. You know, Jane in Monroe has a comment that may sort of relate to this. Jane, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. My question for the speakers is whether they've given any consideration to the role that privilege plays in all of this, because when you describe the incident with the basketball player, as well as the stealing of the mascot, you know, putting charges on somebody else's account is probably a crime, and as is stealing a mascot. And I'm wondering if you've considered the role that privilege plays in preventing these things from being referred as crimes and sort of changing the consequences dependent on the actor. And I'll take my response off air. Thank you.
Interesting. Thanks, Jane. John, do you want to take a stab at that first?
I'm smiling because that's absolutely a fantastic point. Mm-hmm. And we definitely are looking at thinking about the collegiate environment within this context of Title IX offices that ensure that students have a safe learning environment, deans of students' offices that are careful to pay attention to Americans with Disabilities Act issues, and the way that we can have some structure to make sure that not only, you know, crimes, but just also activities that go against the student code of conduct and things like that. So absolutely, I think that one of the things that Ember and I have mentioned is the idea of context. And we are looking at not just who are the kind of targets, but also who are the kinds of perpetrators who can do this kind of work, kind of social, kind of interactions. And I absolutely think that that's a critical thing that we're going to be looking at in doing this research. And your comment just makes us think about that more as we go forward.
Yeah, for sure. Is it more likely to happen sort of top down-ish, or the other way, a prank, April Fool's joke?
I think it definitely happens. From what I've seen, it happens more across people from the same sort of level. So entry-level firefighters pranking other entry-level firefighters. Typically, the chief would not necessarily be involved in most pranks because coming from the top down, it would be viewed more as a bit of an abuse of power. And that gets into a, sort of touchy gray area that most people don't generally want to go near.
Yeah, that makes some sense to me. I was thinking, as you were talking, I was thinking about Click and Clack. Remember Click and Clack, the Tappet brothers?
Mm-hmm.
Who they talked about a guy phoned in about something that they had pulled on a worker who had tried a new additive to his gas tank. That he said, "Oh, this is for sure going to increase my gas mileage," and so somehow they were able to get into his. They got some gas, and they were able to get his gas tank open, and they'd start adding. They added a gallon of gas, and he was reporting on his mileage that he was getting. And so they added a gallon, and then they a little later they'd add a couple of gallons, and he's keeping track, and he's amazed at the amount of mileage, and he's bragging and bragging. And then after a time, they started siphoning gas out of his tank. This is a very I don't think you could do it today with the kinds of gas tanks we have, but then he started to get more and more concerned, and this prank went on over a period, I don't know how long, it had to have been several months before they finally let him know what they were pulling on him. But that, I thought that was a great prank.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely seen a lot of long-form sort of jokes over the course of time. At the firehouse, one instance was the firefighters decided to post a picture of a cow on Craigslist for very, very, I think like $100, which I believe is a cheap price for a cow. And they gave one of the firefighters' phone numbers as the contact. So for about a week and a half, and he had no idea, he wasn't in on the prank until the very end. He was constantly getting called and texted throughout the day from people all over asking to buy this like cow from him that he did not have.
I love that story. And I remember another story from the book Paper Lion, which, I'm blank. If you remember that.
George Plimpton.
Do you remember the story from that about Thanksgiving turkeys?
Oh, gosh, no, I don't.
He, the lions, the older guys got him. There was a grocer in Detroit who wasn't the nicest guy. He was kind of a curmudgeon, let's put it that way. And so the new guys on the team got a letter supposedly from this grocery store saying that they were to get free turkeys for Thanksgiving and they could come and pick them up the day before Thanksgiving. And they should just tell him how big of a turkey they wanted. And one of the guys said he wanted a, I don't know, a 70-pounder or something like that. Anyway, he didn't know how big a turkey was. Anyway, he shows up at the grocery store and was run out of the grocery store by the owner when he said he wanted his free 70-pound turkey. I love that story. Well, gender, Amber, you're working on your dissertation. It looks at gender and firehouse culture. You've told us some great stories about it. What's your favorite prank from your studies?
Oh gosh, there are so many. I think my favorite was probably one of the most intricate pranks the firefighters ever played on each other. And so their shifts are 24 hours, and they each have their own sleeping quarter, their own bedrooms, which are right next to each other down a hallway. And one firefighter decided he was going to prank the other. So he managed to, their bedrooms were right next to each other. Sometime during the day, he jerry-rigged an IV saline drip line right into the ceiling of the other bedroom, sort of cracked it into a tile so that you wouldn't notice it if you were in this bedroom. And then when they finally went to bed, every minute or two, he would drop 1 to 2 drops of saline onto the person's face. And he kept doing this for about 2 hours until the person finally realized they were being pranked and went into their bedroom.
I love it. Well, have you guys been pranked? John, you start with you.
I have a rule in my class where if a cell phone rings, if my cell phone rings, one of the students gets to answer it. And if one of their cell phones rings, that I get to answer it. And it's a way of shaming them into keeping their phones off. But early on when I was doing this, I taught at Queens College and I told them that. And a student, you know, their phone rang and I had to answer it. And I ended up talking to this woman's husband who was upset that some man was answering, you know, this woman's phone. But then he realized, he remembered it halfway through. He was like, oh, Professor Wynn, I'm sorry. I actually heard about your rule, and I'm really sorry about that. I'm like, please, would you like me to tell something to your wife? And he said, just tell her. I'll call her back later. And I said, so I announced this whole class. And then about 2 weeks later, one of their cell phones rings. And everybody laughs, and they give me the phone, and I start talking, and the person on the phone starts talking something about some real disaster, and there's a real problem, and there's an emergency, can you help, or something like that. And I actually felt really, really nervous. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm like talking to it. The student is an EMT or something, and I'm really in trouble. And then everybody in the class starts laughing, and it was somebody in the back of the room calling somebody in the front of the room to get in the class and talking with their hand over their mouth, and the whole class laughed. It was a big joke at my expense on my own, turning my own kind of rule against me, and that's the kind of thing. Like they're pulling a trick on me. And, I don't think it was April Fool's Day, but it certainly could have been a good April Fool's Day joke.
Oh, for sure. What about you, Amber?
I mean, I come from a family that absolutely adores their practical jokes. There's always been a rubber chicken just hanging out on our bookshelf. The whoopee cushion is in full sight. And so I just sort of grew up very cautiously, checking my seat before I sat down for dinner and things of that nature.
Well, I have one more I can tell about one of my, your April Fool's Day doesn't always fall on during a class, a time when I'm teaching, but some years back it did. And so I came into the class and announced that, and they all knew that I was working on a student term abroad program, working with students on it. And I just came in and said, well, two of our students have been arrested in Trinidad on drug charges, and I'm going to have to go down there to handle this and take care of it. And I'd likely be gone for a few weeks. But the dean of the college had agreed to take over my class. And they were all standing there sitting there with their mouths open. And then I said, of course, it's April 1st. And so I think I got a good one, and I think I'll get a good one today with today's class, as long as nobody's listening to my show right now, when they take a look at what is supposedly the grades for their midterm exams. Well, John Ember, this has been great fun. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
It was a lot of fun. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
John Wittes, Associate Professor at UMass Amherst, where he studies urban culture. Ember Canely, doctoral student at the University of Massachusetts Amherst and the Department of Sociology. And they're co-researchers on a project involving collegiate pranking. That was a lot of fun. Thanks to them. And thank you so much for listening. Tomorrow we'll talk about the misunderstood mission of Jean Nicolet with the author of a new book. So I hope you'll be with us for that. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.